Oops.
Hey, it looks like we're all here. Marshall, if you want to start us off here.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Sleater, Judge Gaitis, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are here for our last oral argument on today's calendar. And this case is A21-0367. Joseph Lee Salisker, respondent, versus William Paul Kiley, Jr., appellant. Mr. Abris, is that how you pronounce your name?
It's Abris.
Abris, yeah. Thank you. Mr. Abris, you are the only party appearing today, so you will have 15 minutes for your argument. And at the start of it, if you could please state your name and the party you represent for the record, and then we are ready for you to go.
So thank you, and may it please the court. My name is John Abris. I'm the attorney for the appellant in this matter, William Paul Kiley, Jr. And so fundamentally, this case is about the proper interpretation and application of the Minnesota Harassment Restraining Order statute. A harassment restraining order is a statutory remedy. Therefore, a Minnesota district court has to follow the requirements of the statute and has a limited basis on which it can issue such an order, specifically the requirements that there be, among other things, a finding of reasonable grounds to believe that harassment has occurred.
So, counsel, let me ask you, I mean, I understand you to have sort of two arguments against the HRO in this case. One is that what issued didn't actually accord with what was discussed during the hearing, which was a mutual order mutually restraining the parties. Although I think there was just one person asking for an HRO, right? So, and then the other one is that, well, you simply, as I understand what you're talking about now, is that a district court simply can't enter an HRO without, in fact, making a finding. So if we start with the latter argument, is it your argument that someone has to stipulate to the evidence, or there has to be an evidentiary hearing and a finding made based on the evidence of the underlying factual basis for the HRO? Is that it?
Yeah, exactly, Your Honor. It is that the statute says, among other things, that there has to be, the court has to determine that there are reasonable grounds to believe that the respondent is engaged in harassment.
And so if the parties were to agree to a mutual order, that would be invalid unless the parties also agreed that they had mutually harassed each other?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor, that would be one way. And I guess the other way would be if there was a knowing waiver of that right, which I think that's our other argument, is that to the extent that the court attempted to get Mr. Kiley to waive his right to a hearing, that really didn't happen. I guess that would be the other way. He could say, Mr. Kiley, you have a right to a hearing. Are you waiving that right? And that never occurred here. So that would be the other way, as if there's a knowing waiver of the statutory requirement.
But Mr. Abris,
go ahead.
Well, thank you, Judge Smith. I wasn't sure that your second answer squared with your first answer to Judge Smith's question, because I assume your position is legally one cannot, whether knowingly or not, stipulate to a harassment restraining order absent findings of harassment. And do you have any law to support that first statement? And if that's your position, then it would be irrelevant, I suspect, whether there was knowing waiver.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, in terms of authority, I would just point to our appellate brief. Off the top of my head, I don't have a specific case. What I'm relying on more than anything else is just the general principles of statutory construction, interpretation, what's required, which is, if you have a statute that's plain and unambiguous, you have a district court just has to follow that. And that would be, that's in the canons of construction and number of cases that we cite.
Well, and that's why I'm more convinced by your second argument, because I understand the point there, and that seems to be the bigger issue here. Would you not agree that parties, in whether statutory or common law, if they stipulate or agree to a remedy, the court need not make findings on the underlying common law or statutory basis for the remedy that both parties agree. And so here your client appeared to agree to a restraining order, but isn't the big issue the court didn't issue the mutual restraining order that your client had agreed to?
Well, I don't have a straightforward answer, so I'll just say I think yes, that there needed to be those findings. The statute requires that. I think, I mean, there's case law to suggest, and I guess I couldn't find any case law specific to harassment restraining orders, but you know, there's case law that says that a statutory requirement can be waived knowingly, or waived by a party, which would be a knowing relinquishment of a right. And I think in this case, if you're talking about what actually happened in this case, I don't think there was a knowing relinquishment of a right to a hearing in the findings. But I would say my position is that yes, there needs to be, our position is that there needs to be a finding of harassment in order to issue a harassment restraining order. And the statute really doesn't allow for any other circumstance.
Wouldn't there also need to be some sort of admission? I mean, beyond I'm relinquishing my right to contest this, wouldn't there need to be some kind of an admission that harassment had occurred?
Yes, that's yes, Your Honor. That's what my position is that, yeah, or what I'm submitting to the court is that, yeah, the statute would require something like that. You know, I think that there's a number of different ways that would could be accomplished, because the statute doesn't say how the findings have to be procured or anything like that. So yes, I would say at a minimum, a party admitting to the facts that would constitute harassment would be at least a minimum for complying with the statute.
Like a situation where you have an anti-discrimination statute. Obviously, there's certain things that need to be proved before a district court could order anything on a person's claim by statute. And yet the parties come to an agreement in which there's no admission of wrongdoing, but then it results in the consent decree with certain orders by the district court as part of the consent decree of what needs to be followed. Are you saying that all of those types of, you know, statutorily based claims that result in an agreed to remedy that's implemented by virtue of some sort of order, let's say a consent decree, are invalid without the underlying findings where there's no admission of wrongdoing?
Well, no, Your Honor, not as a general proposition. I would say it all depends on the details. And I think that if, as with anything, you know, if there's a knowing agreement on the part of the party that's meant to benefit, I guess, from the statute, or you know, to the extent that a statute like a discriminator or an anti-discrimination statute creates a right, you know, if the person against whom discrimination occurred is knowing that by entering into their consent decree or whatever, that a right is being waived and that they're aware of what's happening, you know, I think, like I said, I think the case law does support that as a deviation from a statute.
Well, can I tell you one critical fact that makes this a little different for me is the fact that Mr. Kiley wasn't represented by counsel at this hearing, right?
Yes, Your Honor. He did not have counsel.
Okay. And the other individual also didn't have counsel. Is that correct?
Correct.
I mean, does that affect our analysis at all from your perspective?
No, absolutely. I think that without an attorney there, it becomes even more vital that the party that the district court explains carefully to the party what it is they're relinquishing by agreeing to, you know, in this case, if he was agreeing to a harassment restraining order and doesn't have an attorney, it's even more important that the judge, you know, explain what exactly he's agreeing to. And so, and yes, like Your Honor pointed out, that, you know, Mr. Kiley was not represented here, neither was the other party. And as far as the court, you know, did mention that a harassment restraining order would be issued, you know, the court, you know, basically said, you know, the court mentions issuing a harassment restraining order. If you look to page five of the addendum, line 14 and 15, there's a reference to a harassment restraining order. The court just sort of mentions it offhand, but doesn't do anything else to explain that. And in every other sort of articulation of what's happening, the court says there's no finding of harassment, and then keeps referring to this joint order and mentions that the order goes both ways.
So, counsel, I'm wondering, I mean, I think that you asked for us to reverse the order. I mean, there are different arguments that I think are at play here. One is whether there can ever be an order that where there's a box check that says that there's no finding of harassment. Okay, that's your first argument. I think you've also gone into the argument, well, even if it's an agreement and you could do that, it was not a knowing or maybe knowing agreement or knowing waiver, I guess, of rights. And so the agreement itself to resulting in that order is not valid. And then I think the third argument that I've sort of focused on is whether it actually, the order actually captures what the parties agreed to anyway. I think in the latter two situations, you know, I didn't waive my hearing, I didn't understand what I was doing, or the order didn't capture what I was doing, it would be a reverse and a remand, would it not? And then let's go to the hearing. Let's put parties back in the same position as prior to whatever went wrong with the order. Am I wrong about that? Or what do you think?
No, Your Honor. I mean, I think that would be, I mean, in this case, that's probably the most logical result is that, yeah, it would just go back and then go from there, go back to the hearing stage, and then it would just be, you know, put back into that original position, and then the parties can go from there, and whether that's fight it or agree to something or whatever is appropriate.
Thank you.
Yep. And, you know, so, I mean, for the most part, I would say this is a simple, you know, this does boil down to, you know, pretty straightforward issues. You know, whether or not the court had the authority, you know, to issue the harassment restraining order, it did. And, you know, obviously our argument is that no, that it, I mean, it simply did not, the court simply did not follow the statute. And then, as has been discussed already, that, yeah, any deviation from that requirement would require a knowing waiver of the right that Mr. Kiley had to have a hearing and findings. And frankly, I think beyond the points I've made today, I don't really have much else. So unless there's more questions, you know, I would relinquish my time at this point.
It appears not. We have your brief, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much for your argument. And the case is submitted, and we'll have a decision out in the statutory time period.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Pam.
Thank you, Pam.